and System President Kevin Riley and former UW-Madison Chief of Staff Harry Peterson, and invite them to our podium. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Lisa. That's very nice. It's great to be back with you. I was here not too long ago. Many of you will remember talking about the growth agenda for Wisconsin, and I've been going around to Rotaries all around the state, actually, recently, and talking. And it was interesting to hear from Jim some of your history. I've noticed that some of the other Rotaries have different practices, too, like the River Falls Rotary, where I spoke about a week ago, does a Happy Bucks thing. You guys ever do that? Where they everybody takes a buck or two or three, and they say, well, this is for my birthday, or this is for my grandma's anniversary, or this is for my kid's graduation, and here's $2 for the speaker or the guest. And they go around. So when they got to me, toward the end of this round, I said, this is great. Where's the money for the guest? Don't I get that money? I said, no, you have to give money too. So I figured out what Happy Bucks was about. I'm here to talk to you today a little bit about the Wisconsin Idea Partnership. Before I begin that, I thought I would just lay out a couple of introductory remarks, which I think, from my perspective anyway, are helpful in sort of framing what we're talking about. The UW is closer than ever, in my experience, to getting the flexibilities we need to operate in the 21st century. That's really good news. I've been in the state 15 years, and I don't think we've ever been closer to getting these. And I'll give Chancellor Martin and the governor credit for helping to get us there. We across the UW system are in agreement on the ends we seek. We're in agreement on the ends we seek. The ends are the flexibilities that we all want and need. The ability to act nimbly in the interests of all of you and our students and stakeholders across the state and the country and the world increasingly. The family feud we find ourselves in, if I can call it that, is about the means to those ends. Separating UW-Madison off from the rest of the campuses or keeping an integrated system. Those are the two means we're talking about, debating about, to get to where we think we need to be. That decision is a very big public policy decision with ramifications, both known and unknown, that will go on for years and years and generations of students and generations of students. And it's a big public policy decision about which well-intentioned, intelligent, committed people of goodwill can disagree. And we do at the moment. So we ought to conduct ourselves, I'd say, in the midst of that family feud civilly, knowing full well that however the disagreement is resolved eventually, we will want and need to work together in the best interests of our students and the people of Wisconsin and the nation and the world. This is not a debate between status quo and change. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership, which I'll go through quickly in a minute, proposes very major changes in the way the UW would operate. The debate is about different kinds of change. This is not a debate between those who want the best for UW-Madison and those who don't, or those who don't care about UW-Madison. We all want the best for UW-Madison. I mean, God help us, who wouldn't? Madison faculty and staff, current and former, Madison alumni all over the state and the world, have different points of view on the issue of spinning Madison out of the orbit of the other UW institutions. And Harry Peterson will make that clear in a few minutes. So with that introduction, let me get started talking a little bit about the Wisconsin Idea Partnership itself. And if you remember, when I was last here, I talked about our big strategic vision for what the university needs to do for the people of Wisconsin, the growth agenda. It's about more graduates in the state, more jobs that our research helps to generate, and vibrant communities all over the state where we have many, many of our campuses there. How do we use those campuses to make those communities vibrant, attractive places to live and work? Growth agenda is about more graduates, more jobs, more vibrant communities all over the state. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership, and Andy, I can ask you to move it. By the way, Andy Richards is the chief of staff in my office, and I'd say that he's a chief of staff who looks a lot better than Harry Peterson does, who was a former chief of staff. age may have something to do with it, Harry. I don't know. At any rate, There are three themes here that I'll play out across these remarks, and I will be running through these very quickly in the interest of time, all the slides. We are one of the most efficient, accountable, and productive systems of higher education in the nation by any measure. And if you want the measures, I can give them to you. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership is designed to create a stronger, unified system, better than the one we already have, letting us do business in more effective and efficient ways. The deep budget cuts that we face in this budget, the 11-13 budget that's coming fast on us, will affect every campus, and every campus needs the tools, the flexibilities to react to those cuts. All the campuses need them. Next slide. Just a couple things on accountability. Some things that not everybody might know. If you look under access, 92% of Wisconsin residents who apply to the UW system are accepted. Now, they are not all accepted at their school of first choice, but they are all accepted somewhere in the system. High level of access and affordability, our tuition remains very competitive to our peers. In terms of success, our graduation rates are better than the national average. Not good enough, I'd argue, but considerably better than the national average. Brain gain. How many here have heard the term brain drain, right? Probably a lot of you. People worry that we educate students, they leave and go elsewhere. What we found in a recent survey, we updated some data, which was getting a little old, we thought, was that 81% of our graduates who start at any of our campuses as Wisconsin residents are living and working in the state 3 to 5 years after graduation. We do not have a brain drain problem in Wisconsin. We have a non-brain gain problem. We do not attract enough people with college degrees into the state. In terms of satisfaction, we were recently in a part of a national poll that was run by the American Council on Education that did a satisfaction survey of graduates. And we found that 98% of our alumni have a favorable impression of their alma mater, and 85% said that their time on a UW campus, quote, effectively prepared them with the knowledge and skills they need. Now, this survey was run by the Winston Group, which is a Washington, D.C. polling firm that does a lot of work with candidates running for elective office, and the comment of the head of the firm was, if an elected official or one wanting to be had poll numbers like this, they'd be as happy as a hog and you know what. So by any measure of accountability, and we send these and lots of other measures down to the legislature and the governor's office every year in our accountability report, which is up there as well. So by any of those measures, I think we're doing as well. Could we be doing better on all of them? Yes. Are we working at that? Yes. Next slide, Andy, please. What are we facing in the budget in 11-13 that's been proposed? Well, a $250 million cut over the 2 years of the biennium to our operating budget, huge cut, and another $90 million of requested or required of all of our employees in paying higher rates for their retirement and health insurance benefits. So if you put those two together, it's a total impact of over $340 million in cuts to all the UW institutions and all our employees. Next slide. So let's look at where all the students from this eight-county Thrive region, the economic development region that Madison is part of, are enrolled in the UW system. I thought especially for this group, this would be of interest. And you can see on the slide how it all divides out. 28% of the students from the eight-county Thrive region attend UW-Madison. That means 72% go somewhere else in the system. 14% at UW-Whitewater, 12% at UW-Milwaukee. I think those are probably the next two biggest campuses in terms of enrolling our kids from this region. So we need to consider the impact of these deep budget cuts and the possible spinoff of UW-Madison on other campuses where our kids study. The budget as proposed would give those other campuses no flexibilities whatsoever to handle their cuts in 11-13. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership does that. It gives Madison and the other campuses the flexibilities to handle those cuts, and that's why 13 of the 14 chancellors have signed on supporting the Wisconsin Idea Partnership. In terms of the operational flexibilities we're looking for in the Wisconsin Idea Partnership, these are the six major categories, and I'll run through each of these very quickly and can come back in the question period if you want on any one of them. Andy, you can go right to the first one on budgeting. You know, our big problem with budgeting is that it comes in silos. We have to spend it in silos. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership would have us getting a block grant from the state and being able to move the money around as we thought was appropriate to accomplish our mission. And with that accountability report, still very much part of that deal. That is, I think what would make sense would be if the state would say, here's what we want to hold you accountable for. Here's what you need to do for the people of Wisconsin. Here's the amount of money we can afford to put toward that, which won't cover all of it, but some of it. And if you meet these goals, we'll reward you. If you don't, we'll dock you. That would be a sensible way to run an airline, in my view. We're not there now. If we save a lot of money on utilities because we turn the heat down and turn the lights off, we can't take that savings and use it to re-outfit an old chemistry lab that desperately needs it. That money saved in utilities goes back to the state. So we have disincentives to behave in an efficient way right now. In tuition and pricing, second area where we're looking for flexibility. This is a sensitive one. Probably for elected officials, the most sensitive one. For many students and families, the most sensitive one. And now we are restricted in how we get to raise tuition, and we're restricted at the other end in how we get to spend it. It's a double whammy. It's not just how much we can raise, it's how much we can spend. We are in conversations with the legislature now as they look at the budget about what assurances they might need to let us have more flexibility with regard to tuition. We'll see where that goes. We know we need to do this responsibly, and we know that if the view of the legislature and the governor is if we got more tuition flexibility, we were not handling it responsibly, they can take it back as soon as they give it. On human resources, we need a system for our personnel system, a human resources system that recognizes that we operate in a different market for talent from the other state agencies. The system we have now does not recognize that. We are much more into national and international markets in both attracting and retaining than the good people we get than most state agencies are. It's just a difference. And the personnel system we have now does not recognize that. I think, you know, Madison and the other campuses ought to be able to use any title that they want. And if we got a block grant, if going back to the budget request that we're asking, Madison and all the campuses could choose how much of their budget block grant they would put under compensation and salary. They could make that choice, and that's why that budget flexibility is so important, the budget flexibility is important and relates to the human resources flexibility. The fourth area in capital projects, we know that our project delivery methods are not as cost efficient as they could be. We know we could reduce time to completion, save money of our projects. We know that the level at which we have to seek approval from DOA for projects is way low for what we think we ought to be able to do. So more efficiency there would be a big help. The more buildings you build, as on the Madison campus, the more that kind of efficiency is going to be helpful to you. In financial management, we think that we could manage our revenues, our interest earnings, retain that interest, which we can't now, in ways that would be helpful to our educational mission. The program revenue funds, that is gifts, grants, auxiliary dollars, auxiliaries being food service revenues, dormitory revenues, would reside in the WIP proposal in the local government fund, that is the State of Wisconsin Investment Board, the SWIB, as many of you know it, but the interest would go to the UW institutions, not back into the state. And procurement. We think that we can save some money by participating in higher education purchasing consortia, for instance, that we're now prohibited from operating in. We understand that we don't want to do this in a situation where our pulling out of the state pool would drive up the per unit costs for the rest of the state, because in the long run that would cost everybody more money. But we think there are some areas where that wouldn't be true. And increasingly, some of these higher ed consortia, by the way, this is an interesting development. Well, if your public university is purchasing through them, and these are multi-state, some of them national consortia, will allow the other state agencies to make purchases through the higher ed consortia. So we think there's lots of room for exploration there if we had the flexibility to do it. So those are the six areas where we're seeking flexibility. And again, we can get into a lot more detail on any of those if you want. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership would allow us to do all that without incurring the risk of the likely results of fracturing the UW system. And here is a summary of those risks as I see them. unnecessary duplication. You have two systems, in effect, two entities, results in, as it had before the merger 40 years ago, unnecessary duplication of administration, of facilities, of equipment, of degree programs. It also results, I'd argue it would, in wasteful competition. You know, we have a lot of good cooperation going on across institutions in the system now. It's taken us a long time to get there. If we take this apart, we'll be competitors with each other. We will be arguing for the same resources from the state and trying to increase our reputations nationally by getting as big a piece of those resources as we can. Is there competition now among the institutions? Yeah, but it's more in the line of what I like to call co-opetition. We sit together, we knock it out around the chancellor's table and decide how we can put a unified budget proposal together to the people who make the decisions, the governor and the legislators. Another real risk of separation, I don't think it's a risk, I think it will happen, is driving up costs, because the unnecessary duplication and the wasteful competition will drive up costs to the students and the families and the taxpayers of Wisconsin. And the other real risk of separation has to do with reputation. I think our campuses, all of them, have a boost in their reputations by being associated in the same system with UW-Madison. I think that's part of the reason the UW-Eau Claire's and the UW-La Crosse's and the UW-Whitewater's have higher reputations than many of their counterpart comprehensive campuses in the other states. So I don't think we want to lose that across the system. And I also think there's a reputational issue here for UW-Madison that's a threat to them if they separate. Let's go to that. Let's look at two of the flagship campuses around the country that are often pointed to as models for us, Michigan and Virginia. UW-Madison is both the flagship and the land grant in this state, both the flagship campus and the land grant institution in the state. The University of Michigan is not in Michigan. Michigan State is the land grant. In Virginia, the University of Virginia is not the land grant institution in that state. Virginia Tech is the land grant. And the fact that Madison is both the land grant and the flagship shows in the tuition differentials, which you see there, Michigan and Madison being a lot, Michigan and Virginia being higher. And there are two figures for Michigan, by the way, because in their tuition system, you pay the $11,000 plus in your first 2 years and the $13,000 plus when you get into the upper division. But that difference shows in the tuitions and in the percent of out-of-state undergraduates enrolled in those campuses. Madison still is at below 25% out-of-state undergraduates. University of Michigan's at 36%, University of Virginia at 31%. My argument is we do not need to mimic Michigan or Virginia to be great. We can be great as Wisconsin. Let's go to the next slide. And Madison is different from Virginia and Michigan. And Madison is, I'd also say, treated differently within the UW system from the other institutions, recognizing its dual flagship and land grant status. I know one of the worries people have, or one of the statements people have made, is, oh, there's all this pressure to treat Madison the same. We get treated just like UW Superior. It's not true. The evidence is not there. Here's the evidence that Madison has been treated differently. The tuition is higher at Madison, and we've supported the Madison undergraduate initiative. And by the way, that the other UW institutions at $7,057 on resident tuition, that's a weighted average according to enrollment. If you just look at the sticker price tuition at all of the other campuses and average it, that would be $5,866. So Madison really has a much significantly higher tuition than the average. Salaries are significantly higher. These are full professor salaries at Madison than the average of the other institutions. The number of majors. Madison has more than a third of the total degree programs in the entire system. And in terms of non-resident undergraduates, Madison at almost 25%, the others at an average of 6. So I think the evidence is there to say that we have recognized the difference that exists in Madison. And if we get these flexibilities, we'll be able to continue doing that. And we can, and we will, and we should. On to the next slide. So, and this is my final slide. What's good about the Wisconsin Idea partnership. I think it reflects the unique culture of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin idea. I went to school in Indiana, to college. I've worked in Minnesota, New York, and now Wisconsin. And Wisconsin is a different place from all of those other places. There's a different culture, a different feel. And the Wisconsin idea, I think, is part of that. As the former chancellor of UW Extension, I think I know something about that. And I think John Wiley knows something about that. Let me tell you what John was quoted as saying recently in a newspaper article. Having experienced Wisconsin politics firsthand, Mr. Wiley said breaking off from the system would only solidify the perception across the state that Madison is a quote, elitist institution with little connection to the rural communities that dominate Wisconsin. The campus has benefited politically from its affiliation with regional institutions, and it risks losing that advantage by going it alone, he said. Quote, this is John. I see no reason why the senators and assemblymen from other parts of the state would be particularly sympathetic to anything Madison wants from the legislature, he said. You need to be of the people to have legitimacy here. And I think that's more true here than in any of the states I've worked in. It certainly is more true than Virginia and Michigan. The Wisconsin Idea Partnership will give us the flexibilities we need, all the campuses, without doing the damage to all the campuses that separation will. And it builds on the Wisconsin tradition of an institution that is at once the flagship and the land-grant institution for the state that responds to state needs in concert with its UW sister institutions, making for a stronger set of UW institutions overall. I think what this is about, and I think this is what Madison is, excellence without elitism. That's what Madison is now, I'd argue. That's what Madison will be in the 21st century if we can get the flexibilities, if we can get the flexibilities we need. And that, I'd submit to you, is what the people of Wisconsin want their flagship land-grant institution to be. It can and it should. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Peterson.
Thank you, Kevin. I had planned on getting up and saying that I agreed with everything that Kevin Riley had said. That was before he made the smart aleck remark about the relative age of his chief of staff. I have been a guest at this group a number of times, and I have had good friends who were here, and I think especially of my good friend and the friend of many of you, Gordon Baldwin, and also Wayne McGowan. I learned a great deal from both of them. I came here in the late 80s as a guest when Nana Shalala was first appointed, and I gave her, I think, some unsolicited advice about how she might improve her presentation. This was while she was having lunch, and she nodded. And then when she referred to the people who came, who we all thought we were guests of Donna's, a couple of us, the staff members, she referred to us as her handlers. And actually, I learned that later that was an apt term, but I will speak fast. If some of you need to stay, Kevin is an academic. He is a tenured professor at UW-Madison. He can write excuses. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. Downtown Rhodey has a great tradition of providing a forum on important issues, and this certainly, I think, qualifies. Kevin has described some of the flexibilities that could be extended to both the UW-Madison as well as the other institutions in the system. I strongly support those proposals. Donna Shalala, my former boss, referred to the state of Wisconsin, meant ironically, of course, as having what she described as a, quote, world-class bureaucracy. This has always been a burden. Now that the universities are experiencing huge and continuing budget cuts, the lack of flexibility is even more painful. So I'm here today to explain to you why I believe that Biddy Martin's proposal for the UW-Madison to break off for the UW system and become a public authority is not a good idea for our university. I not only think it's not a good idea, I think it's a very bad and dangerous idea, one that puts the university you and I love at considerable short and long-term risks. I'm involved in this issue and my own initiative, and I've spoken on it at a forum last month in Madison, and also I've written several articles on the subject. I mentioned our love for the UW-Madison. I am here today for that reason, although virtually all of you could be up here speaking if that was my major qualification. In fact, I suspect I would need to get in line because many of you here have been a part of that university for longer than I was, so that is not enough of a qualifier. I'm also here today because I have a perspective that is informed by having worked at another UW system institution, the UW-Green Bay, when it opened before merger. I did my dissertation about the leadership at the UW-Oshkosh, another university in the system. I lobbied for higher education in four states, including Wisconsin, of course. I served as the deputy chancellor in Minnesota State College and University System and helped put together the most ambitious merger in the last 25 years. I also reported to governing boards and understand the crucial role that they play in serving as a buffer between universities and the day-to-day political pressures such as those we are experiencing in Wisconsin. I understand politics, legislators, and systems of higher education. In the brief time that I have, I'll outline three major consequences of going from our current system to that of a public authority separate from the UW system. I'll include with a checklist of things I believe you need to be comfortable with before you support this proposal. There are many unstated and sometimes not thought about assumptions that go into any proposed course of action. It is often those assumptions that cause things to not work out as we'd hoped, both in our personal as well as in our organizational and professional lives. Everything I have read by the supporters of this proposal focuses entirely on what they believe will be the advantages of the flexibility that will come from the new Badger partnership. They do not begin to address the complexity and what I believe are the unintended and unanticipated consequences of this proposal. As I said, I will focus on three. First is the opposition from the other universities. This proposal has to assume that the reaction of the other 13 universities in the system to the UW-Madison breaking away will be benign. We must assume that the other universities will not unite in opposition, initially to the proposal and, should it become law, to the UW-Madison. In fact, the other universities are united, and they're working very hard in opposition to this idea as we speak. The executive branch of Wisconsin government has become increasingly strong in recent years. Each of the last several governors have made more political appointments, retained fewer career professionals in leadership positions. This is bipartisan. That's important. Removing from the DNR board the authority to appoint the DNR secretary, a change supported by Governor Doyle, and the requirement now by Governor Walker that all administrative rules go through his office are recent examples. Governors are becoming more influential, more directly involved in state entities. Governors would argue, and I think reasonably so, that the public is demanding that they be, that government be responsible, that the public is holding them accountable, and they need this executive authority to do their job. Given this strong trend, the idea that any governor and any legislature would permit the UW-Madison to become a mostly independent public authority over which they, the legislatures and the governors, would voluntarily and statutorily have little influence contradicts everything we've experienced in Wisconsin and national politics in the last 20 years. If the public authority does become law, the other 13 public universities will remain united and they will be a very effective force politically. Well, the UW-Madison is the strongest single university with loyal graduates throughout the state. The collective political influence of the other universities far exceeds ours. This relates directly to funding. There may be some pre-merger nostalgia among some of you here today. Why can't we go back to the way things were? Times have changed. The other universities used to be small, sleepy teachers' colleges. Today, they're neither small nor are they sleepy. During the 2009-2010 academic year, the UW-Madison conferred about 10,000 degrees, while the other public universities awarded more than 20,000 degrees. These 20,000 graduates register and they vote. They are more likely to come from within Wisconsin and they are more likely to stay here. 57 of them are in the state legislature compared to 23 UW-Madison graduates. The competition from funding would very likely come from an existing pot of money, not additional money, and the UW-Madison would lose. This occurs in other states that do not have a unified system. Politics, to a large degree, is a struggle over allocation of resources. That's part of democracy. The question is where the struggle takes place. I want to keep the conflict out of the Capitol across the street and have it remain among higher educational colleagues, chancellors, and the system president. Also, not incidentally, the UW-Madison fares better under such a system. In Van Hise Hall, we can argue on the merits. In the Capitol, we get beaten on the politics. The UW-Madison will see only one block grant for each biennial budget. The size of the grant will not only be dependent on the recommendation of the governor, but the decision of the legislators. The other universities will lobby for more money. Does anyone here think that legislators from La Crosse, Stevens Point, Eau Claire, and Superior will look to the school aides and aides to the cities coming to their area for additional funding for their hometown university? Or will they look to the block grant designated for the UW-Madison? The proposal for the UW-Madison is often compared, and Kevin did this because of the comparison has been made by others, with the status of the University of Michigan and the University of Virginia. The former was created by the Michigan Constitution, has special status. The University of Virginia has a great deal of autonomy. The state of Michigan does not have a system. That's why University of Michigan Ann Arbor is not in a system, because they don't have any systems there. Nobody's in a system. All of the year universities go to the state capitol in Lansing and fight it out. The concern about politics dictating funding is not an abstract one. In Michigan, Representative Dominic Giacobetti was a Democratic representative from the UP. He chaired the Appropriations Committee. He had such a powerful position that Northern Michigan University received many times the amount of state aid per student as any of the other state institutions. Northern Michigan University had a difficult time adjusting to life without Dominic because their state appropriation dropped so much after his death. I might add, he died in his 90s while in office. The University of Virginia is also not in a system because that state does not have a system. Because the funding decisions for each university are made in the state capital, George Mason University, because it is a rapidly growing Northern Virginia, has more voters, is receiving more generous funding at the expense of the University of Virginia and the other universities in the state. The UW system will have 13 universities, including the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, where the legislators represent about 25% of the legislators come from that area, united in opposition to the UW-Madison. The money that the UW-Madison and all the other universities receive from the state now comes in two separate appropriations. The first is for operating funds, for the cost of operating the universities, day-to-day operations. The other funding is for faculty and staff. Under the plan proposed by the chancellor, this will no longer be true for UW-Madison. Our funding will come in a single block grant, out of which salary increases must be paid. Can I have the water? I have to speak fast. I know that you have to leave at 1:20, some of you. I will try not to take that personally, but I'm going as fast as I can, and I know you've got a limited amount of time. Inviting two academics on the same program is it puts you at some risks. The salaries are the largest single expense in higher education. Why not? We're in the people business. Although we have some wonderful facilities, they're worthless without our trained, loyal faculty and staff. Almost every day I drive by the Institute of Discovery, as do many of you, and I marvel at that new building. Spectacular though it is, the most important thing about it is the people who work there, our faculty and staff. We will be required to get any salary increase from that block grant or private funding and tuition increases. Let me give you an idea of the magnitude of the additional funding we would need for salary increases if we did not receive money from the state. Private fundraising. A 1% salary increase for faculty and staff amount to $5.4 million per year. If this was paid for by private donations to the UW Foundation, donations would need to increase by that amount each year to maintain a 1% salary increase. So in year 10, you have to have $55 million coming in, 5.4 the first year. An increase of 1% increase each of those 10 years would have an additional and multiplying effect so that the cost of a 1% increase each year by year 10 would require an additional annual donations of $369 million per year. From the year 2000 to the year 2010, the support for the UW-Madison has received from the state has increased by about $77 million. If during that time the university had to make up that support from private donations, you would have to increase its endowment by $1.25 billion. Yes, those are not million, those are billions. That assumes a 5% return annually, amounting to roughly $99 million a year. Donors are not enthusiastic about contributing to maintain salaries for faculty and staff. They're interested in making a difference with their donation, not maintaining the status quo. In the four states in which I have worked in higher education, donors believe that base salaries are the responsibility of the state in which the institution is located. Tuition increases. If the UW-Madison was to pay for salary increases and operating expenses through tuition, the cost to students would be high. For example, if the UW-Madison recruited 220 additional non-resident students and charged them $25,000 in tuition, it would collect just over the $5.4 million for each of the 4 years they were at our university. Of course, the UW-Madison would need to continue to recruit those students annually to increase or at least maintain that number of high-paying students to pay for the 1% salary increase. These illustrations are not meant to suggest that this is precisely how the UW-Madison would go about it, but they would need to do some things to deal with the loss of what I believe would be state funds. Implications for funding and tuition increases. In the Joint Finance Committee meeting on this subject at the end of last month, it was suggested that UW-Madison is seeking a divorce from the state and the UW system. I think divorce is an apt term. Now, although one legislator was quoting as saying he went through a divorce and he found it quite liberating, this divorce would be like others you and I have known. I could go on and talk about questions of custody, but I only have a few minutes. The UW-Madison seeks a divorce from the regents and the state because it seeks autonomy. Let's be clear, divorces go in both directions. If our university obtains the divorce and independence, the state of Wisconsin will also be free and independent from the UW-Madison. If this proposal passes, when the UW-Madison comes to the governor and the legislature, one that is facing tough financial times, as it certainly is now and will be in the future, with much competition for funding for other worthy sources, it will come with the explicit, having achieved initially the explicit statutory authority to raise tuition to any level it wants without any legislative approval. Do you think it is possible that legislators will reply that they're struggling with aids to their cities and K through 12 education and the UW universities, and that the UW-Madison has unlimited authority to raise tuition? They sought that authority, and now they should use it? I think it's not only possible, I think it's very likely. I know that Chancellor Martin has said she would seek tuition increases for 8.5% this fall if she receives the authority she is seeking. However, this change is not sought on a trial basis, not for this year and next, to see how it works. It is forever. It will be in the state statutes. The forces on tuition increases will be inexorable over the years. Those increases will accumulate and be large. Already we can see the effects. The UW-Madison is taking a disproportionate cut of the budget cuts proposed by Governor Walker, and why not? He is offering authority for the university to raise tuition as much as the new board would like with no legislative review or approval. One of the most important things I learned from the three chancellors with whom I worked is that we are stewards of this institution, and we need to be act as good stewards, as though we will be here forever, even though the university, but the university will be here forever. And that's the guidance that I received that's served me well throughout my career. If the chancellor's proposal passes, we will not have obtained a trial separation, but a divorce. First, we will have separated from the legislature and the Board of Regents. Ultimately, because we'll have many of the features of a private university, including high tuition, we will separate ourselves from the people of the state of Wisconsin. The University of Wisconsin was founded before the state of Wisconsin. There is much at risk. Third, the loss of the current governing board. Earlier this month, the Board of Regents, a member of whom was going to be in this audience, Jeff Bartel, can't be here today, but a previous board member is here today. They received a summary of its support for academic freedom over its history. The board members were emphatic about continuing that history. This received virtually no media attention because it was not news, because we have taken for granted one of the finest traditions of our governing board. We only need to look at other states to see what might happen. On July 1, if the chancellor's proposal becomes law, there will be a 21-member board, 11 of them appointed by the governor. They will become full board members without a Senate hearing or a vote of confirmation by the full Senate, There will be no opportunity to ask these nominees at a Senate hearing about their support for academic freedom, tenure or stem cell research, research on global warming, evolution, or how they feel about the political parties soliciting emails from faculty members. All governors from this summer on will make appointments with the knowledge there will be no public scrutiny of their choices before a legislative committee. These board members will have three-year terms. These three-year terms are shorter than any public university in the United States today. In summary, I am sure that many of you know about decision trees. If you answer one way, you go in one direction. If you answer another, you go in another direction. I close with a checklist from A Simple Decision Tree. Each question I suggest must be answered in the affirmative for you to support this position. You should support this proposal if you are not concerned that the competition for funding from the other UW institutions will result in smaller block grants for the UW-Madison. You are not concerned about the burden this will place on private fundraising. You're not concerned that the statutory authority given to the new board to increase tuition to any level will, over time, put the UW-Madison out of reach of many middle-class and working-class families in Wisconsin. You are not concerned about the loss of our current Board of Regents replaced by a brand new board with three-year terms, the shortest terms in the U.S., appointed directly by this and future governors without Senate confirmation, unlike our present board, which serves seven-year terms. You are not concerned that the decisions about funding allocations for the UW-Madison and the other universities will move from Van Nuys Hall with the Chancellors, Kevin Riley, and the Board of Regents to the Capitol and the legislature. You're not concerned about the possibility that the loss of the UW-Madison to the UW system will have a destabilizing effect on public higher education and result in a loss for our state and its citizens, especially our young people. Finally, and perhaps most importantly, to support this proposal, you need to believe that its passage and implementation will not put at risk the relationship of this great university, one that you and I love, to its citizens, the modest, hardworking taxpayers who have supported it since 1848. I believe it will not only put that relationship at risk, it will damage it. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and thank you for your kind attention on Wisconsin.
Thank you very much. Given the importance of this topic, let me suggest that we are over our usual time, and if you need to go, go. I will suggest that our guests can stay. Let's do two questions. And President Riley will not be providing excuses, but I can give you extra credit if you stay. So if you do have questions, we have two mics. We need to use them since people are moving around. I've got Sean with Regina Milner.